It was back in 2007 that President Jimmy Carter announced the formation of a bold new initiative for faith-driven racial reconciliation called the New Baptist Covenant. This year, the former president has expressed alarm at the growing racial tensions we've been seeing in this country and has been actively working to grow the covenant active in a small number of cities since its founding. I'm very pleased to be joined now by the Reverend Trey Lyons from Park Avenue Baptist Church and the Reverend Michael Wortham from Ebenezer Baptist Church, both located in Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome to State of Belief, both of you.
Thank you for having us. Thank you for having us, yeah. Dr. Gaddy. Glad to be on.
Reverend Wortham, let me begin with you. You serve a historic congregation. Ebenezer Baptist was pastored, as most people know, by the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., as well as his father. With such a legacy, what led you to take the step to take part in the New Baptist Covenant?
Well, we see work with the New Baptist Covenant as an opportunity to really continue the work that not only Dr. King but others before him is really trying to help our country become a more perfect union. And a lot of that deals with being able to overcome this big hurdle that we have in our country, seemingly, that we call racism. And so being able to be active in helping eradicate this sin in a lot of respects that's caused a lot of damage in our country to everyone, so not only black people, but to white people, Hispanic people, all persons who constitute and make this nation. And so trying to find ways as within our denomination to say that how we're going to do what God's called us to do, and that's to love God with all our heart, mind, soul, and strength, love our neighbor as we love ourselves. And so Ebenezer is one of the church that's always stood on the side of justice and stood on behalf of justice, and figuring that this is something that's a great opportunity to say how we can connect as a Baptist congregation and be able to connect with our other Baptist brothers and sisters and lead the charge in showing what the beloved community can look like.
Reverend Lyons, let me ask you the same question. Why did Park Avenue Baptist get involved in the covenant?
Yeah, so an interesting part of Park Avenue's history actually is a sort of relationship with Ebenezer over the years, and I use that term somewhat loosely. And so the New Baptist Covenant for us was a chance to really redefine that relationship and to push forward, as Michael said, towards the beloved community. Park Avenue Baptist was founded as the Fifth Baptist Church of Atlanta shortly after the Civil War, and the neighborhood it began in is what is known as the Old Fourth Ward of Atlanta. And it initially began, like many churches in the South, basically as a Sunday school and education program to teach literacy to children and to use the Bible to do that. And so as the church started there in the Old Fourth Ward, it actually moved out of there around the turn of the last century, about 1900, and relocated to this side of the neighborhood, which is about a mile away now presently. But when that move happened, the land that the church had been meeting on in that building was sold to a new African-American congregation that was starting work there. And that was the congregation that actually became Ebenezer over time. And for myself, we had always sort of known, but I didn't know till about a year ago when we were digging through some historical records, where I found from the 1900s an eyewitness kind of account that had been written down, where a member cited that they moved out of that part of town, and I quote, because apartments were being built and the Negroes were moving in. And it was just a kind of a pit in my stomach when I read that. We'd always kind of had a hunch, but this was, you know, confirmation there.
Yeah.
And tragically, Park Avenue wasn't alone in that. You know, that was the plight of most white, certainly Baptist churches, as that's the history of the convention. You know, the difference between Northern and Southern Baptist Convention were that Southern wanted to continue to own slaves. And so that tragedy is a part of our history. It's something that personally and in my own sense of calling I'm wrestling with on a daily basis, is how do we recognize that our historical institutions have this legacy knit into them? So New Baptist Covenant provides a framework for encountering difference, for moving past that, not just to reconciling, but to really having difficult conversations about how we go forward in true racial justice, not merely reconciling, but even anti-racist. How do we move past this to the vision of the beloved community? And so New Baptist Covenant brought us together. Though there had been sort of these loose connections throughout the year, it gave us the opportunity to say, okay, what work can we do now to impact our communities mm-hmm. jointly?
I'd like for whichever one of you wants to begin, that both of you can weigh in on it, talk about the details of what the goals of the New Baptist Covenant are and how those are going to be carried out.
I'm going to throw that one to you, Trey.
All right. I think the innovation of the New Baptist Covenant is that it was a forward-thinking vision laid out by President Carter. Where can we find common ground, and how can we galvanize Baptist forces united under a common purpose, a common cause? And so from President Carter, you know, the clearest divide beyond mere theology was race. So first it was to get everybody in the room together. And then the question was, when we get everyone in the room, what galvanizes us? What do we have in common? What can we agree in covenant to? And so Luke 4, those words of Jesus hearkening back, taking the scroll of the prophet Isaiah, really came to life. And that sort of became the credo to say the Spirit of the Lord is upon not only Jesus, but is upon us as the embodiment of Jesus in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we go out and accomplish the things Jesus talked about that the Spirit enables us to do? How do we preach good news to the poor? What does that actually look like? How do we proclaim recovery of sight to those who are blinded in some way? So when we talk about white privilege or power or any of these sorts of really intricate things, oftentimes folks just don't see that.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we're living in covenant, we're relating to one another. We're working together. The movement, I think initially it was a meeting, you know, let's get everyone in the same room and then see sort of what happens. And what's grown out of that are these covenants of action, and that's what Park Avenue has entered into with Ebenezer, something Michael and I worked closely on. It's a relationship, a friendship between us that's grown out of that,
mm-hmm.
That largely I have New Baptist Covenant to thank for. But for us, it was, okay, now that we've agreed, all right, we need to be about these things. How do we actually be about that in our communities?
Mm-hmm.
And so for us specifically, it's sort of congealed around children's literacy, making sure that kids are able to read at grade level. Because in our neighborhoods, both of our neighborhoods, that's the single biggest deterrent to children advancing in education.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe even for our congregation, it's something that they were excited to get into because it's something that's just a part of who we are as Ebenezer, because by virtue of the witness of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in the world, him and his father and others, that many different types of people come to Ebenezer on a regular basis. And so, on one hand, we are historically black church being. On the other hand, we understand how we're situated in the larger perspective of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so being able to say that, it's good to see that, hey, we as a church, we're going to be about what we say, is that we want to see beloved community happen in the world. So being able to partner with our brothers and sisters at Park Avenue to be able to say,
mm-hmm.
this is how we're going to work together to improve the literacy for our children. And I don't think anybody's ever going to be upset when you say we want to do work together to help advance our children. And interesting enough, a lot of times we can't take that for granted, too,
uh-huh.
about being intentional about making sure that our children get what they need. And so even just so with our education building and through our summer camp, we started a summer camp, and it was through that summer camp that we began to do a lot of the work with helping our children with literacy. And so that's what Park Avenue was able to help provide counselors. We provided space and children. And then just over the summer, they're just coming together, interacting, and making sure that over that course of period of time when students aren't in school, that they're getting what they need to keep their literacy skills growing. Because we know that students who aren't reading on a grade level, they're more than likely not to finish high school. They're probably not going to go to college. It's a snowball effect by simply not being able to read on your grade level. And even from just a social historical standpoint, when we talk about just this, even with African Americans at the point in time, how it was illegal for us to learn how to read. And so that right there fundamentally can set you back for so many generations and so mm-hmm. many years. And so being able to say that, no, we're going to be intentional about making sure that within these spaces that our kids get what they need so they can be able to advance and have every opportunity for them to be all that they can be.
We've seen widespread flare-ups in racial tensions in this country. The most recent has been in Milwaukee. What is the role of faith communities in moving us beyond the current situation?
The role of faith communities, and a lot of it, is one, to be present. I think what's happening with a lot of the tension that's taking place in the country now, in a lot of respects, you have a generation, they don't feel connected to the faith community for whatever reason. And I know I've heard from some where they just felt like that space hasn't really been an affirming space for a lot of them. And so for them to be able to go out and express themselves, but a lot of times they haven't found spaces to be able to do these things. And so our churches, for one count, always provide a safe space for people to express how they feel and express honestly how they feel. Mm-hmm. I think too often the role that we try to have the church play in this is in a sense to kind of calm everybody down. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of respects, there should be room and space for people to be angry and to be upset. And mm-hmm. if the church allows it to be a space where people can do it and do it in a constructive way, in a sense. Mm-hmm. Something that Dr. King said before, he says that riots are the language of the unheard. Mm-hmm. And typically what happens is that people finally listen once they see a building on fire. But the real question should have been, why weren't people listening before the building caught on fire?
Yeah.
And so it has to move beyond waiting for some property to get torched until people actually pay attention and realize and listen and see that something is going awry. And if church is in the prophetic tradition, we should be able to diagnose and put our finger on it before things come awry and be able to say it. And I see that's where church can have a more prophetic and more helpful role in this, is one, being spaces where people can come and lament and people can come and express their frustration and express their pain. And then two, be places and spaces where we organize to see how do we disrupt the systems that cause these events. Mm-hmm. Because what happened in Milwaukee wasn't just simply an isolated incident, but probably it's because you have rampant unemployment in Milwaukee. You have rampant violence in Milwaukee. There are things that are causing the conditions for these things, and if we don't deal with the root of the problem, we keep responding to the symptoms that keep happening instead of dealing with the root cause of a lot of these issues.
Uh-huh.
Very helpful.
Amen, first of all. Everything Michael says is absolutely true. Michael and I, after Ferguson, when everything sort of went off, I was following a little bit on Twitter. Before the news cameras were there, before the Quick Trip burn, before all of it, I saw a little bit on Twitter, and then I saw Michael had posted some stuff. And so we started texting back and forth, and I said, what's going on? You know, and we were kind of keeping in touch. And exactly what Michael said was sort of the gut-wrenching conclusion we realized in the chronology of events of what happened in Ferguson. CNN, all the cameras, no one showed up until the QT burned. Until some property was damaged, it wasn't a story. It wasn't a story when they were already in the streets protesting. It wasn't a story when some of the courageous church leaders, not all, but some were out there, you know, trying to mobilize the people. It wasn't a story until something happened, until there was, you know, a bit of salaciousness to it. And so, you know, the unrest we feel like in this present moment, I think, strangely, it may be one of the things that to a certain extent cuts across majority white congregations, majority black congregations and traditions. But, you know, every church wrestles with telling folks what they want to hear so that they'll show up and participate and join the church and bring their children and tithe. And preaching the gospel, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, as somebody said, you know, when you say you're going to follow Jesus, make sure you remind them that table flipping is an option. You know, that's something Jesus did too. Saying that is to say, you know, the churches, I believe, when we are fulfilling that, we are the ones who help hold the authorities and the powers that be accountable. We're never called to be complicit in the powers that be. That's never what Jesus calls us to. The narrative that we're called to is to respond in peace and in love, but an active love, an intervening love. And so I'm not concerned about the critique some people will say of, oh, well, there's no unifying voice of Black Lives Matter. That's not true. Mm-hmm. There's no figurehead because they've democratized the process. Mm-hmm. Or they say, oh, we don't know what they want. No, they've been very clear about the demands. My biggest concern is that most of those folks find no home, no comfort, and no encouragement from most of their native faith communities. Mm-hmm. Most of the people involved in those movements that I know and have worked with grew up in church. And if they went to their church of origin and said, hey, we're tired of people shooting and killing us. We're tired of these mass inequities. We want you to see this. Please pay attention to this. The church says, oh, we don't want to get political. Their church of origin, sure. At least.
Yeah.
Now, there are churches that are prophetic and that are moving boldly. Ebenezer's, that we aspire to be that space as well. But I honestly think the silence of the church in this era is not dissimilar from the silence of the church in the civil rights movement, which, you know, Dr. King decried as saying that was the most appalling thing was the silence of the friends, not the vitriol of his enemies.
The Reverend Trey Lyons is pastor of communication and engagement at Park Avenue Baptist Church, and the Reverend Michael Wortham is assistant pastor of college and young adult ministries at Ebenezer Baptist Church, both in Atlanta, Georgia. Theirs are among the other congregations in the nation taking part in President Jimmy Carter's New Baptist Covenant for Racial Reconciliation. Thanks to both of you for taking some time today for us and sharing with us this new and exciting venture. We're thankful for your gift to us today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Gaddy.
Well, thank you so much.